Anthony, this is exciting, isn't it? I love this book.
I'm enjoying it.
It's wonderful and so full and rich with so many thoughts. Lots and lots of information, lots and lots of detail.
Very profound.
And we can't pursue every detail in this discussion.
No.
But I think it's wonderful to read this writer just capture. I like to put myself in the place of one of his readers back then.
Mm-hmm.
And think, wow, you know, how wonderful it would have been to have received
that. Interesting that, you know, most people couldn't read in that day, too. It's only really the leadership, perhaps, in the church that could actually read this stuff.
Good point. We don't think about that
sometimes. No, we assume everybody's reading books, but this is very, very mature, isn't it? This guy has really worked at his Christianity.
Great stuff.
I love
some of the themes that he has developed in this, the first four chapters. The superiority, the sufficiency of Jesus Christ is right off the bat. This is what it's all about. He's just doing an amazing job of
talking.
I like what you were saying in summary, too. People often, I think, take a misguided approach to all of this, saying, well, the writer is trying to establish that Jesus is God Almighty or an angel man or, you know, some kind of a created angel-like being or something. He doesn't say any of those things, does he?
No.
Not once. It's amazing.
The text that strikes me so interesting is that high priests are chosen from among men.
From among men. I like
it
that.
Should be clear that God cannot be a high priest. I mean, that's just impossible.
Yeah.
The whole point is that he has to be a member of the human race to represent us before God.
Of course.
And, of course, to speak for God to us.
And if he were an angel man, that's not us.
No.
We're not angel men, I suppose.
It's not us.
And we're not God men.
No.
So he can't represent it unless he's truly
one of us. That's right.
That's the reason that he had to be made.
Yes.
Made like the rest of us are made as human beings.
And
like
also
that.
In 7:14, when we get to it, it's obvious that he's descended from Judah, isn't that?
That's wonderful. I love that.
It's very clear. It had never occurred to any of these writers that Jesus really pre-existed as an eternal being, much less as an angel. So I think this points to the degree of chaos, you know, that we've arrived at 2,000 years later. We're trying to get some simplicity back into this.
Yes.
He's a man born supernaturally, descended from Judah and from Mary.
Well, I like something you said earlier about, if his objective was to show that Jesus is superior and that he's God, all he had to say was right off the bat, hey, everybody, Jesus was God.
Yes.
End of discussion.
Right.
There's no reason to go on saying, oh, and he's better than angels, and he's better,
it's
better than Moses.
Better than Moses. Yeah. I mean, isn't that rather obvious?
Come on now, people.
Yes.
So, or if he wanted to say that Jesus was an angel man or some sort of created being in that sense, he could have just said it.
Yes.
He did not say those things. Everything he's saying is the amazing... I think, if you want to talk about a mystery, the mystery is that a man, one of us, has been so now exalted to the right hand of God. That's wonderful and amazing.
It is.
Wouldn't have expected that.
This is the key to the whole universe. I mean, the whole point of this universe, which is mysterious in many ways. We don't fathom it entirely.
Sure.
But the whole point is that it was made with a man in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And as a model man for us, there's no kind of a model to try to imitate somebody who's fully God.
That's right.
That doesn't make any sense at all to me.
No reason to complicate it. These
that's right.
Terrible complications. Oh, he's
that's
actually
right.
some... We know he's a man, but he's also God or some part of God or something or another.
Yes.
Or he's some sort of a, we don't know, angel being or something like that.
We should mention again, I think, to remind ourselves in the first chapter that God did not speak, not speak in a son in the Old Testament time. That might suggest that there wasn't a son at that time. So he's the final word of God to us.
Yeah.
And my eye falls on 4:14. It says, Jesus, the Son of God.
Mm.
Well, does anybody think that Jesus was, the person Jesus was there before he was born? That's very strange.
No.
Son of God is supposed to be God the Son in some systems. It's Jesus who is the Son of God.
Yes.
Son of Mary, Son of David, and the Son of God.
That. You know, if you could put those two things together then, recognizing that Jesus is the true human, begotten Son of God.
Yes.
And then recognize that God didn't speak through a son back those days. Put those two things together and you're anchored in,
I
think. And there's no reason to go.
Right.
You know that everything else
must
match those two facts.
That's right. That's the framework within which this whole thing operates.
Yes.
It's the intrusion of this strange God the Son that's a bit threatening because it's Satan who's trying to rival God.
Yes.
It's always Satan who's, I want to be God.
Yeah.
And Jesus is never doing that. And when they say, well, you're making yourself out God, that's not right. He immediately refutes that. And I'm not. I'm only doing what God told me. And it's very strange for Jesus to be imagined to say, I am God, and as God, I'm doing what I'm told to do.
That's right. I do exactly as I'm told. That's right.
So
that's right.
This is the amazing thing, Dan, and that is that Orthodoxy, in a sense, has adopted the hostile view of the Jews. It's the Jews who accuse him of making himself God. And evangelicals say, yes, that's what he was.
And so all of a sudden, these enemies of Jesus, yes, the adversaries,
they got it right.
They're the best theologians in all the New Testament. They had this thing.
Paradox.
Which of course, isn't true at all. That's right. That's amazing.
There's that famous statement from Barrett, one of the commentators on John. He says, it's intolerable to think of Jesus saying, I'm God, and as God, I just do what I'm told to do.
That's right.
I love it.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Well, shall we read then and continue with our fifth chapter?
Right.
This,
certainly,
this
the high
morning.
Priest.
You know, as I'm looking at this fifth chapter, I'm thinking, you know, maybe the fellow who divided this into chapters, maybe if he had dropped it back up to beginning the fifth chapter, mm-hmm. verse 14,
mm-hmm.
that would have been very nice.
It would have been better, I think, yes.
Because that's where he introduces what he's really going to talk about, this business of a high priest, Jesus being a high priest.
Yes.
And
he's still in Psalm 110, isn't that? We've done
that's
the first verse.
Yeah.
He keeps alluding to that, but now we're into the fourth verse or so, where
of
you
Psalm
are a priest according to the order of Melchizedek. Next topic.
Yes, exciting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all right, let's begin. We remind ourselves then that he has just said that we have a great high priest in verse 14 of the fourth chapter. Mm-hmm. He's passed into the heavens, mm-hmm. Jesus, not God,
mm-hmm.
Not an angel mm-hmm. man, but mm-hmm. Jesus, the Son mm-hmm. of God. And he says, because of this, let's hold fast, let's hang on to our profession and our confession, he may say.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a high priest who can't be sympathetic, if you will, mm-hmm. to our weaknesses. Mm-hmm. He really can because he really was truly one of us.
Yes.
He's been tempted in all things like we are, without sin, mm-hmm. and that's wonderful. He achieved that we fall short in. So that's wonderful.
A perfect man can do that. I mean, that's a standard, isn't it? Not that we make that standard fully. We're not sinners, clearly, but it is possible to resist temptation if you live life correctly.
Surely.
Yeah.
And he did, and that's wonderful.
Yes. Yeah.
Therefore, let us draw near with confidence to the throne of grace, so that we may receive mercy mm-hmm. and find grace to help in the time of need. Mm-hmm. So he's encouraging the people.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. But it has to do with this high priest business, doesn't it?
Yes.
We have a high priest.
Yes.
And this is something different from what was going on under the law of Moses. So he's encouraging these Christians to think differently about this matter and hold to a faith where we have a high priest, not like those fellows over there at the at the temple. This isn't about that.
Develop this whole thing of a completely new form of Torah, and this is very radical to some people.
Yeah.
The priesthood under Levi, it failed because they died. You know, they had to be replaced all the time.
Yeah.
But this guy
didn't work out so well, did it?
And he's from Judah. Imagine that.
Yes,
no priest comes from Judah.
That's right.
Or didn't until this time.
Until now.
A new thing. Yes.
Oh, so let's read then. Mm. The fifth chapter, verse 1.
Mm-hmm.
For every high priest taken from among men is appointed on behalf of men in things pertaining to God in order to offer both gifts and sacrifices for sins. He can deal gently with the ignorant and misguided, since he himself also is beset with weakness.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And because of it, he is obligated to offer sacrifices for sins. As for the people, so also for himself.
Yes.
And no one takes the honor to himself, but receives it when he is called by God, even as Aaron was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So also, Christ did not glorify himself so as to become a high priest, but he who said to him, you are my son, today I have begotten you, just as he says also in another passage, you are a priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek.
Yes.
Wow, so he's launching us off here, isn't he? Into some amazing understanding.
He's keen on Psalm 2, because we already had Psalm 2 in chapter 1.
Yes, you know, yes.
One of the proofs of Jesus is not only God is going to have a son, 2 Samuel 7:14, but in Psalm 2, you have become my son. I've begotten you.
I've begotten
and
you.
And the text there in the Hebrew of Psalm 2 actually says, I've said in regard to you. In other words, the appointment to son was not made to the baby. I mean, he didn't speak to the baby in the womb, obviously, but the text can be read as God made this prophetic announcement of what you're going to be. He said, of the son. You can translate that away that way. You're my son. Today, of course, that's very embarrassing to some systems, because there's today is not supposed to be with God today at all. Let me say it again. With God, today is supposed to be endless time. And that's where we've really made that very difficult. Yeah. Not that hard.
So he's telling us then, after he has said at the end of the fourth chapter, we have a high priest. Mm-hmm. He is wonderful. He is Jesus. He is the Son of God.
Yes.
He can sympathize with us, all of these things. And now he's kind of, in the fifth chapter, he is dropping back and beginning to tell us that this is the way with good priests, good and high priests. They're chosen from among men in order to minister to God on behalf of men.
Yes.
So Jesus is right in there.
He must be a man.
Yes, that's right. He is absolutely
priest.
A man,
no,
for goodness sake. How many
priests.
Ways can this man say this?
Very clear. There's a technical point that might be of interest to some of our audience if they're familiar with the Hebrew and the Greek. But in Psalm 110, verse 3, in our Hebrew Bibles, it says something about your youth. The Hebrew is yaldutecha. And a very interesting thing has happened there. If you change the pointing, you get yeliditicha, which means I have begotten you. And even the huge dictionary here I've got behind me, the Theological Dictionary of the New Testament, says probably the Jews were not keen on this I have begotten you. And by changing the points, they came with this very strange thing, your youth is, which originally probably was yeliditicha, which means I have begotten you, exactly like Psalm 2.
Yes.
And would you believe it, many Hebrew manuscripts still read that way, not the one that we have in our Bibles.
True.
And the Septuagint reads that way.
Right.
The Greek version has, I have become your father.
I see.
Exactly like Psalm 2:7. I think it's very fascinating. It's repeated right there in Psalm 110.
Great stuff.
Verse 3 in the Septuagint and many manuscripts of Hebrew.
So if a person wants to get a grasp on this writer, once again, a good groundwork is to go back and check Psalm 110, verses 1, 2, 3, and 4.
That's right.
And
that's
our writer here has been working with this Psalm 110 and 1 especially.
Yes, exactly.
Now he is working with, we think, Psalm 110 and verse 4 especially. And verse 3 is certainly of interest to us, particularly in some manuscripts. And
that's right. That's exactly right. Something that people will be interested in looking at.
Yeah.
It's one of the great sort of secrets, the suppressed information, is that Psalm 101, where you have Adonai, my Lord. If they bothered in commentary to explain that that's a non-deity title, all would become clear. It's not God speaking to God, but God speaking to a man, an exalted messianic figure. So that's then perfectly in tune with the fourth verse, where the high priest must come from man. I mean, it's just absurd to imagine that was Adonai, you know, Yahweh speaking to Adonai. But that is amazing, Dan, because in our very sophisticated commentary world today, you know, we're quite expert with all the work that's been done by brilliant commentators.
Yes.
They conscientiously will not tell us what that second Lord is. In fact, they actually put a capital on it in most translations, and that, they tell you, is where we have Adonai in the text, so that the reader is looking at that and saying, well, that must be Adonai. It isn't. It's Adonai. They broke their own rules to obscure the fact that this is a human Messiah, not a God Messiah.
Indeed. And so a priest then, per Psalm 110 and 4, per the Aaronic priesthood, a priest is not God. God is not a priest to himself.
That makes no sense.
And a priest is not an angel, because an angel doesn't minister to God on behalf of human beings.
No, that's right.
It had to
that's
be.
Right.
Jesus had to be made as a true human being, like us.
Yes.
Just like we're made as true human beings.
That's right.
I love that.
So we have that marvelous text in 1 John 2, verse 1, which uses the word parakletos, you know, the paraclete, the comforter, who is Jesus Christ, would you believe it?
Yeah,
that's
wonderful.
Amazing.
Yeah.
He's that intercessor then. He's interceding on behalf of us.
So now the writer is telling us, mm-hmm. No one under the Aaronic priesthood, no one who was a priest or high priest,
yes.
takes that honor to himself. He doesn't get up one morning and decide, I think I'll just be high priest for the people.
No way.
So, and he's saying, so it is with Jesus. Yeah. Jesus didn't decide, hey, I'm just going to be the high priest for folks.
Right.
God has this in his purview.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
God
absolutely.
Determines who will be priest.
Absolutely.
Aaron was a priest because God decided that.
Yes.
God determined he
yes.
would be. And now,
that's right.
God is about to do something else
yes.
then with regard to priests.
Yes.
And
yes.
he's already giving us a clue here that Jesus is a priest.
Yes.
And he's laying this groundwork for us to help
yes.
us to realize God has decided it. So God, he goes back in, and we're reading it here in verse 6,
mm-hmm.
speaking about Jesus
mm-hmm.
in the Psalms,
mm-hmm.
God says in Psalm 110 and verse 4,
mm-hmm.
You are a priest. God
mm-hmm.
declares him a priest forever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
After the order of Melchizedek. So this is wonderful then.
Yeah.
But not after the order of Aaron.
That's right, yes. The Aaronic priesthood was by descent from that family, wasn't
yes.
it? It was fixed in a given family.
Right.
But Melchizedek was not an Aaronite.
Right.
He wasn't a Levite. So this is a brand new thing
right.
we're getting to here.
Yeah. Verse 7.
Yes.
In the days of his flesh,
mm-hmm.
we're now talking about Jesus continuing
as a human historical person,
being
a human being in the days before he became glorified right. and immortalized
mm-hmm.
at the right hand of the Father. Yes.
But in the days of his flesh,
mm-hmm.
he offered up both prayers and
mm-hmm.
supplications
mm-hmm.
with loud crying and tears to the one able to save him from death.
Mm-hmm.
And he was heard because of his piety.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's a lesson for us, isn't it?
Though? Yeah.
We better be doing things right, doing life right
mm-hmm.
to have our prayers answered. And he
That's
was heard because of his piety.
Yeah. So I suppose if Jesus had not been filled with this piety.
Yes, yes.
He might not have been heard, I
That's
suppose.
Right.
That's interesting,
That's
isn't
right.
it? Yeah.
yeah.
He was heard because of his piety.
Yes, that is right.
I love that. Yeah.
It is, yes.
Yeah.
And I think put some pressure on us as followers of Jesus
yeah.
that we approach God with trepidation and
yeah.
we better be right in order to have our prayers answered. Yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Verse 8, although he was a son,
yeah.
he learned obedience
oh,
from the things
yeah.
which he suffered.
Isn't that amazing?
Wow. So he was a son, which is a place of honor,
yes.
a station of
yes.
honor in any family.
Mm-hmm.
In many, you know, a son has
mm-hmm.
a great station,
mm-hmm.
great place. And Jesus was a son.
Yes. Yes.
But and truly, the begotten Son of
yes,
God is
absolutely.
Right. But he, even though he was in that station, he learned.
Yes.
He learned
obedience. Isn't this marvelous? This is also the image of the apprentice with dad. You know, you learn
oh,
the
yes.
trade.
Of course. Yes.
But you learn obedience.
Yeah.
And it's what we do with our children, isn't it? We train them. Sure, should train
yeah.
them. But this is hardly, you know, a sinless God
yeah.
who's learning obedience. It's so complicated. You mentioned the word complication earlier. It's fearfully complicated. It's right. It's like when we talk about the God part, when we talk about the man part,
yeah.
I mean, it becomes a nightmare of complexity
yeah.
and makes the whole story distract really from the main point
mm-hmm.
of that theory.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I love this story as it really is.
Mm-hmm.
When I think
mm-hmm.
about Jesus
mm-hmm.
being truly one of us,
mm-hmm.
God's son, but nevertheless, truly a human son.
Yes.
And then that amazes me, I think.
Yes.
About. And that all of this that he did
yes.
Was to take the leadership
yes.
for the rest of us
yes.
with God and to minister to God
yes.
for the sake of the rest of us.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. His life even, we don't really visualize this well. His life is an example of learning
mm.
from suffering. And we can imagine that for ourselves, I think. But this is equally true of Jesus. He's actually learning to be better than he was yesterday. He never sinned.
Yeah.
But he's gaining maturity
yes.
through the things that he suffered.
Well, I like this, you know, like in the Luke 2, where
yes.
he was subject to
yes.
his mom
right.
and to Joseph,
right.
his stepfather.
Yes.
And but then he grew
yes.
in favor
right.
with
amazing?
God and
yes.
with men.
Yes.
I love that. So here's growing going
yes.
on, and
yes.
and
yes.
he's growing in favor
yes.
with God.
There's an image there, apparently, in the commentaries they point out, it's to do with metal. When you beat metal,
mm.
it sort of extends it in some way.
Ah.
And there's an image there of Jesus going forward, maturing
ah, yes.
from his experiences.
Wow.
Yes.
I love it.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And this makes no sense if he's God or some superhuman heavenly being on earth or something. It makes no sense at all.
No.
No.
Absolutely. Exactly.
So then in verse 9, and having been made perfect.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
He became to all those who obey him the source of eternal salvation.
What a verse.
I love it.
I love that. I mean, we use that in the Bible college a lot because that is so simple, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You want salvation, all this fuss about faith and works, how much faith and how much work. That's totally unnecessary. You've got to obey Jesus. The issue is, what does that mean?
Yes.
Does that mean going under the law of Moses, you see?
Or not?
What is obedience to Jesus?
Yeah.
We better find that out because it says you don't get salvation in disobedience to Jesus.
Yes, yes.
I like that. It's very easy as a concept, isn't it?
Yeah. And in keeping with his thoughts that he's developing about Jesus being superior to Moses.
Yes.
He doesn't say here this eternal salvation is to those who obey Moses and Jesus.
That's right.
It is to who obey Jesus. Back to this concept of wonderful. Sufficiency of Jesus Christ.
Right.
Is he truly sufficient or do we need somebody else?
That's right.
Is his covenant he's bringing to his people, is it truly sufficient or do we need another?
Right.
And I think we're saying, and rightly so, I think, Jesus is all-sufficient for his people.
Absolutely. Provided we do our part, which is obedience.
Surely.
Obviously, we're not going to get it right from the start, perfect obedience, no. But we should be growing into perfect obedience.
Yes.
The confusing thing for people is, what is obedience? They don't know. They're being told it's this or that law in the Old Testament, or not this and that law, or it doesn't matter what you do. As long as you're saved, you can be disobedient. That's not going to work either. So the great issue for theology today, I think, is what does it mean to be obeying Jesus?
Yes, I think
it's key. I think it's an absolutely brilliant verse, this one, 5:9 of Hebrews.
Verse 10, being designated by God as a high priest according to the order of Melchizedek. Mm-hmm. Concerning him, we have much to say, this Melchizedek fellow.
Yes.
We got a lot we can say about him.
Yes.
And it is hard to explain, since you have become dull of hearing. You're not really in tune with the things of God as you should be.
And these are Christian people.
Right? Yeah,
they're not the unconverted world.
Right.
Isn't that sobering?
So he is going to have a lot to say about this fellow Melchizedek.
Yes.
It's sort of a theme here.
Absolutely.
A very important one, though.
Very important theme.
That's going to explain a lot about Jesus and his priesthood, isn't it?
And the new covenant.
And the new covenant. Jesus. Yes, indeed. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes on to say, for though by this time you ought to be teachers, you have need again for someone to teach you the elementary principles of the oracles of God, and you have come to need milk and not solid food. Wow.
Striking, isn't it?
It is. That's
right. What does it say about our work in congregations? We better move forward and become more mature. We might just be resting on the elementary things. It's not sufficient. If we're not going forward, we're going backwards.
Yes.
That's very threatening.
And after a while, if you're not going forward, you'll lose the grip on the elementary essential things that you did know or should know. And here he's saying, you have need that someone teach you again the elementary things.
You cannot stand still in Christianity. You have to move forward. If you're not moving forward, you're inevitably going backwards.
All right.
There's no standing still. It reminds me of that chapter again where it says, we're warning you lest you drift away. The image there is, from various Greek sources, a ring can fall off your finger.
Mm.
It can drift away. Or driftwood can just go off down the stream.
Mm, mm.
That's the image there. So you've got to keep a tight grip on salvation, and you've got to be moving forward and learning and maturing. Otherwise, you're going backwards.
Yeah. And you're going to miss it.
You're going to miss it. Yes. Yeah. And you ought to be teachers, at least some of you.
Yes.
I don't think he wants everybody to be a teacher.
Well,
that would contradict James 3:1. Don't be too many teachers.
Don't want everybody to be a teacher. That's right.
But you should, at least a majority of you, I don't know how many, should be teaching others when you need to be taught yourself. Right. This is not a good situation.
So in verse 13, for everyone who partakes only of milk is not accustomed to the word of righteousness, for he is an infant.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. So metaphorically speaking, I suppose. He is an infant.
Yes.
Wow. So
a babe in Christ.
Right.
That's not sufficient. Yeah. You've got to move forward.
Yeah. And it's wonderful to be newborn, so to speak.
Yes.
But without growing, we're going to be stuck in a very vulnerable place in our development.
It's very dangerous. Yeah. We're coming now, to these great threatening passages where he really gets tough. If you don't go forward, you're in danger of losing out on the salvation that you've embarked on. And that's very, very serious material.
He's really cautioning them, isn't he? This is very cautionary.
It's a word of exhortation, isn't it? It's a tough balance between kindness and God is great, but watch out.
That's right.
don't miss out.
And isn't that some of the maturity, I think, that I feel like we as Christians today are often missing?
I think so. We
want to seize on the love of God and God's kindness and miss the fact that He is a God of judgment.
That's right.
And that we want to seize upon His goodness and miss the fact that there is a judgment of God to all who do not do well.
That's right. We don't hear preaching as much on that side.
And what about this word of obedience that you're mentioning? I think that's
I find that very striking.
Christ. Yeah.
There's so much discussion, I think endless discussion, about what do you have to do to be a Christian. It isn't that hard. Yeah. You've just got to determine what does it mean to obey Jesus. Yeah. That's the whole story.
Yeah.
And then you just summed up so well the text in Romans where Paul says, behold the kindness and the severity of God.
Yes, yes, yes.
That's exactly that balance that you described.
Paul kept that balance, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah. And this writer does too.
Right.
There's the wonderful, amazing goodness of God.
Yes.
But keep in mind that if we do not obey Christ, if we do not stay in obedience with Him, then we're out of sync, and this is a problem.
Yes.
It's a serious problem.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
Solid food, verse 14, right?
Yes.
Not just milk.
And that's what we've got to have, this solid food.
Yes.
But solid food is for the mature, who because of practice have their senses trained to discern good and evil.
Yes.
They know them and they understand the difference in those two
things.
Right. Yeah.
That's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is.
In Garden of Eden, they weren't to get to that too quickly. They weren't to eat, and get the good and evil thing worked out. They weren't ready for that.
Yeah.
They would be like God if they had it.
Yeah.
But we should be like God now, as Christians, learning to discern truth from error, good from evil.
I think so.
Yes.
Well, and you know, it's interesting to me, Anthony, this writer is, he's really bearing on these issues and working with all these matters.
Mm.
But one of the things that he's not going to be telling people in the entirety of this book is, I want you to be keeping the Sabbath days and keeping the holy days and keeping the law of Moses.
Exactly.
We haven't read that yet, and we're not going to in the entirety
of this
book. So wouldn't it be something, if that's not obedience to Christ, and according to this writer, he's not picturing that for us.
Yes.
Then, if we're drawn into that, that's not mature.
Not at all. It's going backwards. In fact.
Oftentimes, people think, "Well, I'm very mature. Yes. I'm going to do the law, and I'm going to do this." But that's not mature.
Not at all.
And it's not the place that we should come to. He's not wanting people to teach the law. He's wanting people to teach Christ.
Yes, the Torah of Messiah, not the Torah of
Moses.
That distinction is being lost, as we know, in our time in various groups. And
absolutely.
It's a very serious issue, because you're going back under Moses. You are inevitably regressing from Christ, and that's the ultimate apostasy.
Sure.
So, you know, you can say, well, I'm keeping the new moons now. Look how good I am, because God said we're to keep the new moons. Actually, you're not doing well at all. You're disobeying Jesus by obeying the Torah of Moses.
Right.
Isn't that amazing?
And seeing Jesus as not being sufficient.
That's right. Yes.
His sufficiency is what's at stake.
Right.
Do we really believe that He is our teacher?
Mm-hmm.
Do we really believe that He is sufficient as our teacher?
Yes.
And or do we have to look to another? I think we don't want to provoke God to jealousy.
That's
and we don't want to provoke the Messiah to jealousy by going elsewhere when Jesus is everything. He's you are complete in Him.
That's right.
Not Him and someone else.
And Paul himself says, I'm not under the law, but I am within the Torah of Messiah.
More Messiah, that's right.
Essential in our time for people to understand there's a difference in the Torah of Moses and the Torah of Messiah.
Sure.
Now, Paul is willing to go and do some of those Mosaic things, you know, to make friends.
Mm-hmm.
But not for one minute does he go back under the law of Moses, because that would be a departure from the Torah of Messiah, which is all important.
And would threaten this concept of the sufficiency of Jesus Christ.
Yes, not to mention the division and the confusion it creates in the church.
Oh,
right? When one person wants to meet on this day, another says, we'll meet on this day. You've got mass confusion, unfortunately.
Right.
Not a good idea at all.
Well, this is obviously a wonderful chapter.
Mm-hmm.
He's mentioned, again, this concept of Melchizedek.
Yes.
He's going to talk more about that. So when he does,
That's
we'll
right.
get back to that and talk some more about what that was all
yes.
about.